And it is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. And we're now joined by Palm Beach Post sports writer Ethan Skolnick, as well as Broward-based clinical psychologist Andrea Korn. They've written the book Raising Your Game, Over 100 Accomplished Athletes Help Guide Your Boys and Girls Through Sports. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, good to have you. And Dr. Korn, let's start with you. You wrote that as a youth you felt alone and uneasy in athletic settings, despite having very loving parents and loving sports. Tell us about that and what was the problem?
Well, back then when I was a child, I had no idea, you know, what the problem was. I just knew I wasn't able to reach my potential. And as time went on, I've always been a sports lover. And throughout my entire life, when I went back to school after a divorce and went to graduate school, I always knew sports was going to be a part of working with children and adolescents and families. And one of the things I realized after going through my own therapy, how much I realized I didn't understand myself. So it was very important to know one's feelings. And so much of this book is really about helping parents really be aware of the inner world of their child and to remember, to reflect back, what was it like to be a kid playing sports, whether it's unstructured or organized sports, for the first time? And who better to help us than athletes, those athletes that succeeded, that made it, that can recall what it was like because they've been there. They had the journey. So this book truly is a culmination of so much of my life, personally, professionally, theoretically, my love of sports, and truly to want to give something back to parents through these stories. And Ethan has told the most wonderful stories of over 100 athletes.
Now, how did you and Ethan hook up in this collaboration?
Well, my love of sports has been there through the entire process of my career. In fact, when I started, I even had a radio show on Waxy called Teen Sports Network. I wrote for the National Alliance of Youth Sports. I wrote for many other magazines locally. And over the years, I would give talks, and somehow Dr. Jan Bell had heard me give a speech to high school coaches and administrators in Dade County. They invited me to be an adjunct professor to teach sports psychology in their sports administration and business program. And so I was teaching sports psychology, and while I loved the theoretical and the clinical part, it was a night class, and I wanted to keep it lively and exciting and interesting, so I wanted to bring guest speakers on, and I reached out to the community, I reached out to the Sentinel, and Ethan volunteered, and Ethan was a guest speaker the 3 years and the two sections. I taught two sections each semester.
Ethan, how was it for you?
Well, it what's funny, when Andrea and I were when I would come to her class to speak and talk to the students, she approached me after one class and basically told me about this idea about wanting to reach out to parents whose kids were going through youth sports. And it was a pretty easy fit if you think about it because, through what I do and what I've done for the last 20 years is cover athletes. And, currently I cover the Miami Heat, but for the last 15, 20 years I've covered pretty much every major sport in South Florida. And because of that, I had access. I had access to the athletes to be able to ask them about their own views. And the thing is that I've recognized through the years is, athletes want to talk about their childhoods because it's different. They get asked over and over and over the same questions, about, the way that they're playing or their teammates or opponents in the league. But their faces kind of light up a little bit when they get to talk about something that's different. And I think that's what we got to. So we started to compile a list of athletes that might be valuable to speak with. That list kept growing. Then we decided that we didn't have enough diversity in the list. We certainly needed some women on the list because we didn't want this book just to be for boys and for fathers. And so we started to reach out to some prominent female athletes. And it was every time I'd have an event, I'd say to Andrea, I'd say, well, I can talk to this person this day and I can talk to this person this day. And what I found was that the athletes were I didn't ask for an hour. I would try to get 5 or 10 minutes before practice, after a game, something like that in the clubhouse. But that was usually enough to draw out some kind of story that we thought would be appropriate for the book.
What about the parents that are so so driven. I remember watching a movie not long ago about Pete Maravich and the way his father was on him. I mean, he was like the great Santini, and the kid didn't even really want to participate, but yet he was driven to become one of the greatest NBA players.
You know, one of the things that we touch on is you would think that the athletes, because they all made it, and this is the elite. I mean, this is we talked. You know, I talked to everybody from LeBron and Dwayne Wade to Shannon Miller, and it's a very wide range of prominent athletes. And you would think that because they made it, that they'd been pushed. I mean, that would have been my inclination. You know, that somebody had to push them along the way. We actually found it to be almost the opposite of that. That for the most part, most of these athletes kind of made it on their not on their own. They had support, but they had a supportive hand, but not a hand that was pushing them all the time. And one story that we use in the book that I like to tell is Derrick Brooks, who you'd probably go in the Hall of Fame in a couple of years, linebacker for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for years. You know, Derrick went for his first day to practice, football practice, when he was like 8 or 9 years old. He had a very strict stepfather. He went to football practice. He just didn't like it. He went home that day, and you would think that his stepfather was so strict that when he would come to class and see Derrick misbehaving in third grade and lash him in front of the class. This is how strict this stepfather was. And yet when Derrick came home that day and said he didn't really want to play, his stepfather said, okay. And so what ended up happening was Derrick didn't play that year, but some of his friends went out for baseball. He decided to play for them, and then they went out and played with them, and then they went out for football again the next year. And because his friends were doing it and Derrick had been able to make the decision on his own, he decided to play, and sort of, you know, the rest is history.
I know many pro athletes don't really push their kids into athletics necessarily. They know the pitfalls and the travails and how difficult it is to make it.
Well, you're absolutely right, but if I could just get back, because one of the impetuses for the book was statistics that really haunted me, in the sense that 70% of young athletes drop out of youth sports by the age of 13. Now, there's many good developmental reasons. Their bodies are changing, their interests are changing, their parents might have put them in sports and they no longer like that sport, they want to do what their friends are doing. So there is a developmental component. But at the same time, what we were trying to address in this book was helping parents understand and realize that if they put a disproportionate emphasis on winning, on the outcome, putting too much pressure on their children to be everything that they think they should be, then this is going to erode youth sports. And so it was really this piece, which was very significant, to help parents understand what they really needed to think about if they really wanted to help their children have an enjoyable and a rewarding experience, because everything you learn playing youth sports honestly is a blueprint for helping you through life.
Yeah, talk about that some. You say, I mean, a lot of these athletes that I read their stories were actually transformed completely by their sport. If you want to talk about a few of the examples, the ones that struck you.
I'll give a few and then I'll let Ethan pick up the ball. But one thing that we really looked at were several components. First of all, the book has a developmental component, which we started with why play matters, and play starts in infancy. Mm. And it's unstructured, but children are learning so much. And the first chapter, we get into Carrie Webb, who is a professional golfer from Australia. But when she was a toddler, she was going out with her grandparents, and they were carrying her as they played 9 holes or 18 holes of golf. What did she learn? Well, she learned distinctions and differentiations. She learned about different colors, you know, where, you know, because of the tees. She learned that shorter grass was better than longer grass. She learned how to count strokes and that smaller numbers were better than larger numbers, and then that sand trap was really a trap and something not to be explored. So from the time children are very young, sports is valuable. Now, getting into organized sports, this is when they start having rules. And children have to know to respect the rules. They have to learn to respect the authority of their coaches. They have to learn how to get along with teammates. They have to learn how to hang in there through adversity, how to deal with failure. They have to learn how to dig deep and know that sometimes you can play your best, but it doesn't mean you're going to win. And we tell all these lessons through stories that I'll let Ethan go into in more detail.
Ethan?
Yeah, well, I think that one of the things we try to focus on with all of these elements is, again, when you go through why play matters and then we get to kind of why sports matter, and we focus on commitment, and we focus on perseverance. You know, the idea of, you know, a lot of these athletes who, you know, one example is I'll give is David Eckstein, who was ended up becoming a World Series MVP for the St. Louis Cardinals. And David, at about 5'7", too, so he made it a sort of above what you would have expected. But when David was growing up, he played for a team whose coach played his son at shortstop instead of David. And that's something that a lot of kids deal with, is they, you know, a coach is playing favorites or maybe doesn't recognize somebody's talent. And David could have pouted and he could have quit. And instead of doing that, he accepted a move to another position, center field, and then to second base. And the kid who was put in front of him didn't end up making anything in sports. But David not only made it in sports, but he ended up playing shortstop. And he said that because of what happened earlier in his career and earlier in his life, where he couldn't play shortstop, it actually saved his arm for later in his life. So one of the things which we try to make the point is that sports teach you to be resilient, resourceful, deal with different circumstances, deal with failure, which is a major component of the book. And it also, for a lot of these kids, as you were saying, it really provided a way out for them out of some difficult circumstances. Torrey Hunter is one example we cite, who grew up in a very difficult environment in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. Very difficult family situation. He had never known what it was like to have breakfast with a family until he went on a travel team when he was 12 years old. And as he said, I use sports to make my life. And so what we're saying is there's tremendous benefits to sports and to play. But as long as there's a supporting other in the picture who helps the kid get the most possible out of it.
We're speaking with Broward-based clinical psychologist, Dr. Andrea Korn, and Palm Beach Post sports writer, Ethan Skolnick, on today's Topical Currents. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to take some calls and some emails. Stay with us.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, Ethan Skolnick, and also Dr. Andrea Korn. If you'd like to join in with a comment or question, that's easy enough. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that's radio@WLRN.org. Perhaps you'd like to give some experiences of organized youth sports, good, bad, or indifferent. Tell me, Ethan Skolnick, what was your experience with youth sports? What made you be so interested to become a sports writer?
Well, that's a good question. It seems so long ago now. I played, when I was growing up, I played tennis and baseball. I was kind of an undersized catcher in baseball. Played soccer, grew up in Long Island.
Tools of ignorance.
That's exactly right. I don't know why I picked that position in retrospect. But I played some soccer, too. Played all those sports. And I had a supportive experience with my parents. My talent maxed out at a certain point. I kept getting hurt. When I basically got to senior year of high school and college, I pretty much figured I played varsity baseball, but I pretty much figured in high school, but I pretty much figured that wasn't going to go much further. And so I decided to pursue sports writing. And so I did that through college. And then again, when I got out of school, took a job covering the Dolphins down here, 17 years ago. And I've done it since.
Well, before we go on quickly, what's the story tonight with the Knicks? Are they going to play or aren't they going to play?
LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Mario Chalmers are all out tonight.
So with injuries.
With something that you might call injuries, Bonnie. I think it's with first seed in the NBA, itis, right now. So they're all going to sit, and Tyson Chandler is a game time decision for the Knicks. So see, you tuned in and you got a little heat Knicks.
See?
As far as youth sports, what about belligerent and dominating coaches and parents that can be? I know I've seen kids that they're really embarrassed by the parents because they're riding umpires and that, and just over the top. that can really give a kid, I suppose, a really bad taste.
Well, we talk about these parents who really lose perspective completely. And there's some wonderful stories. There's so many stories. Mike Miller has a great story. Brett Hull has a great story. But you're right. The bottom line is the children are going to emulate and model what they see, either rightly or wrongly. And sometimes it leads these children to feel entitled or feel that, you know, they could talk back to a coach or, you know, not feel that they have to respect the authority figure. And there's no doubt that is definitely a problem. But what we were hoping to illustrate more so in this book was to try to point that out to parents, but at the same time, through the stories, we're showing, we're not telling. And we're trying to show them the right way. And if you really want to help your child on this journey to find sports rewarding and enjoyable, and to help your child know him or herself and be the right kind of person and have the right values and morals also in life, you want to hopefully set the right example.
Is there any vetting of these coaches by youth leagues?
There's not enough. I did a piece, this is sort of a little bit of a separate subject, but about 15 years ago I did a piece when I was working at the Palm Beach Post the last time that about the checks that were not done of coaches. And there are too many leagues around everywhere around the country that just don't do the due diligence on that regard. And I think, you know, one of the things that we're telling parents in this book, because it's both about parents and about coaches, is that, you know, for the most part, a parent should try to go along with what the coach is saying to is not create a mixed message for the child. You don't want a situation where the coach is saying something and then the parent is in the car with the kid on the way home and telling, oh, don't listen to the coach. That's not a good situation. But we also are saying there is a point where if a coach is not behaving properly or is putting too much emphasis on winning or is only playing certain players because he's trying to pad his record or something like that.
Or put in his own son,
or
for
put
example.
In his own son. That there is a point where a parent is obligated at that point
to speak up. Didn't we have recently a betting ring on youth sports?
Well, that was not only a betting ring, but a bounty situation, similar to the...
To injure
other players. And, you know, one of the things we do is, what we're saying in this book is, we want you to show up, show interest, but show restraint. And Jason Taylor, who we spoke to at length for the book, has been coaching a former Dolphin. Actually, was on CNN last night. Actually, he's been coaching flag football in Weston, and he's had to deal with a lot of parent situations. And his advice was, and it's one of my favorite quotes in the book. I know Andrew's too. Shut up and clap. That's what he said. He said his advice to parents is, shut up and clap.
Just be supportive.
Just be supportive. And we've other former Dolphins are coaching now. Ronde Gadsden is another. He's had a situation where he's had to basically tell parents after weekend games, I'm not going to talk to you until Tuesday. Because what he was finding was he would come out of the tent. All the kids would get replenished and all the rest, drinks and orange slices or whatever. And they'd come out of the tent. And as soon as they came out of the tent and Ronde came out of the tent, he would have 20 parents rushing him. Why didn't my kid play more? Why didn't you do this in this situation?
Full court press.
Exactly. And I think that's the point we're trying to make to parents in the book, and Andrea hit on it right, is we're trying to point out some of these examples to say, look, if this is the way that you're sort of proceeding here, that's probably not the best way to go for your kid.
What about those children without parents or those whose parents are absent due to work demands or the like? Who do they turn to as a role model or a mentor?
Well, that was one thing we wanted to address in the book. To me, one of the beauties of this book is we have athletes that span over 5 decades of sports. As Ethan said, we have men and women, we have professional sports, we have Olympic sports. We also wanted athletes from every different family structure, every different ethnic background, all different socioeconomic backgrounds as well. The point being is there may not be a two-parent household. It may be a one-parent household and the parent is working 16 hours a day. The child could be adopted. And we have all these athletes that fit into all of these categories, but either there was a sibling or there was an aunt or an uncle or a coach who became the mentor, whether it was LeBron James, whose coach, Frank Walker Sr., took him under his wing. Alonzo Mourning had his adopted mother. I mean, and that was the beauty also, is this book is layered in so many ways. And just for a moment, getting back to what you were saying, the parents, the kids, these athletes that really were successful, their family members really modeled hard work. They it didn't matter what their jobs were. Most of them weren't CEOs. They might have had menial labor like Bruce Smith's parents. But he saw how hard they worked. And these athletes, they model that. O.J. McDuffie's mother was a single parent, went back to school, went back to graduate school. Well, if my mother can do that, I can be persistent and persevere. And so it was really the role models, honestly, that were much closer to home that made a difference. And we tried to show that example. And if you can't show up through FaceTime, show up through a well-timed text. Don't ask your child, did they win? Ask them, did you have fun? What did you enjoy? You know, what did you get out of today? So many parents are focused on the outcome, and we're trying to get them to enjoy the process and the experience.
Right.
And to listen to their children and really be attuned to their feelings, because a lot of children, they're not going to tell you in words when they're mad or when they're sad or when they're frustrated or when they quit, but they're going to see it in body language. So we have a great chapter on listen, Dwayne Wade through Cliff Floyd's experience with his mother, and it's so important in this book. Communication is one of the themes, and trust, Udonis Haslam's story on how he had a stepbrother who he trusted and trusted him in the process of playing in at the park, helped him believe in himself. And the stories, to me, are so rich, and that's what's really captivating, and hopefully parents will find very enjoyable.
We're speaking with Ethan Skolnick. He's the Palm Beach Post sports writer, and Dr. Andrea Korn, clinical psychologist. The name of the book is Raising Your Game. If you'd like to join in the conversation, if you have experience with organized or unorganized sports and want to ask a question or tell a story, the number is 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-9576, or you can email radio@wlrn.org.
That's also, tell us about the events tonight at Books and Books in Coral Gables.
Actually, well, it's tomorrow night.
Tomorrow.
But okay. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for mentioning. We're having an event tomorrow night, Wednesday night, at Books and Books in Coral Gables at 8 o'clock. Andrea and I will both be there with copies of the book. Actually, Jason Jackson, who I think many people know as the Miami Heat sideline reporter, he's going to be there moderating and helping out. He has a couple of sons in youth sports himself. So we hope to go there, talk about the book a little bit, and I'm sure we'll probably end up talking a little Heat,
too. I was wondering how you were going to cover the Heat and also be at Books and Books.
I'm not that good. I can't be two places at once.
So in the book, you mentioned the societal shift away from unstructured outdoor play and away from outdoor activities in general in favor of more sedentary and solitary activities like all computers and video games. And so how can this be remedied? What are the chances that it can be?
Well, it's difficult. And Andrew and James, the former Colts running back, former University of Miami running back, kind of covered that. He said you have to take the joystick away from them. And I think to a certain degree, we are suggesting that there needs to be more balance. And I think that's one of the reasons that we focus on all the benefits you get from sports, because there are benefits in sports that you can't get in a lot of other things. I mean, if a kid's playing by himself video games all day long, he's not going to get what Chipper Jones got from being on a team and having to deal with people from different backgrounds. And you're not going to get the idea of having to persevere through something. So, but it is a different time. There's no question about it. And one of the issues, too, is a lot of schools have cut back on recess time.
Right.
A lot of parks are not in the condition that they used to be in. Maybe they're not in the kind of neighborhood that they need to be in. But the idea is, as a parent or as a mentor, and I think you hit on it earlier, it's not always a parent, but you have to encourage some of that activity, because that activity is where kids find themselves, and it's also where they learn to interact with other kids. And I think that's, again, one of the major things that comes across.
And it's also better for their health.
Well, yeah. That goes without saying, because they get the heart pumping, they're sweating, they're doing a lot of physical activity. But we're also not saying that video games are inherently bad for them, because there are some skills and dexterity they learn. But imagine when we were all kids, you'd go out in the backyard, you could imagine, you could dream. There were so many wonderful gifts just from unstructured play, just going outside and imagining, well, I could be the next World Series hitter and, you know, and hit the home run. And today, unfortunately, the world has changed since 9/11, and parents do keep their kids much closer, and technology has certainly changed our world. But we want parents to realize that there are so many untold benefits, because kids need to learn to interact with others. They need to learn to problem solve. They need to learn how to resolve disputes. They need to learn that things aren't going to always go their way. They need to learn that they just can't always win. How do you deal with adversity? And if you don't learn these skills in the course of peer cooperation, but also through competition against another team, how are children going to be successful in life? They're going to have a lot more difficulties. And we just don't want to be raising the next generation that they function great behind a computer screen, but they've lost their interpersonal and their social skills.
We're speaking with Ethan Skolnick, Palm Beach Post sports writer, and Dr. Andrea Korn, a clinical psychologist. The name of the book is Raising Your Game on Topical Currents. Another short break, and we'll be right back.
And we're back. It's today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Tuesday edition, along with Bonnie Berman, and we continue our discussion about youth sports, about the book Raising Your Game. Over 100 accomplished athletes help guide your boys and girls through sports. And the co-authors are Ethan Skolnick and Dr. Andrea Korn. Tell me, Ethan, should athletes be kid role models? I remember years ago Charles Barkley, after having a gambling incident, was saying, don't hold me up to be the hero for your kid. You be the hero for your kid.
Do I think they should be? I think that they should certainly aspire to be that. Obviously, though, I don't think that they can take the place of the people who are closest to home. And I think that that's really what Barkley was getting at there, is that you know, is that that doesn't forgive behavior in public that's negative, that influences might influence kids. But ultimately, it's the parent who's going to have to make the decision on what is right and what is wrong, and what you should follow and what you shouldn't. And one of the things we do touch on in the book is this idea of inspiration, that a lot of these kids, you know, they were looking for inspiration, and they found it in athletes. You know, they found it. Some of them found it in their siblings. Some of them. Tony Dorsett decided that he wanted to play football because he had brothers who were playing football, and he wanted to be like them. Others want to be like maybe a teacher. They want to be like someone else, another mentor who's relatively close to them. But a lot of them do look up to professional athletes, and so they hold that place kind of in society. I mean, right now. The stuff that LeBron James and Dwayne Wade do, like the fake glasses and all that sort of stuff, and the video bombing. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine who runs Boca Hoops up in Boca Raton. He's telling me all the kids are doing that stuff now because they're going to follow the people that they see on television. So I think it's important that there's an understanding that that athletes can be role models, but they shouldn't be the only role model. I think that's kind of where we draw the line.
Let's take a call or two. Our number, 1-800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576. We have some lines open. Also, email is open. That's radio@WLRN.org. First up, we have Jose in West Palm Beach. Hi there.
Hey, good afternoon, Joseph.
Hi.
Hi. I'm a sports referee, a basketball referee, and I can relate to what the doctor was saying about parents pushing the kids too hard, or showing sometimes acts of sportsmanship also coming from coaches. And generally, I have found out if the coach is undisciplined, the kids are also. So mainly we see our role to educate the coaches and the kids when we're on the court. And another aspect, I've seen parents go to the game, watch the kids, but they spend too much time on their cell phone, texting back and forth, and they don't watch the kids once in a while. And I think that not good for the kids, because they see that they're not paying attention to them.
Something we didn't touch on is the difficulties that the refs have. They take a lot of heat.
They do. It's interesting. One of the athletes we interviewed, Benny Blades, actually switched from coaching to refereeing because he felt at least he could have some control there. But the referees do deal with quite a bit. And, you know, there's a story in there We were talking to Mary Jo Fernandez, a tennis player who obviously grew up in Miami, and she was an elite player for a long time. She's now a broadcaster. And Mary Jo was saying that she finds that, you know, when her kids are playing, that the parents on the other side, they'll be cheating. You know, they'll be telling their kids to cheat. You know, and so I think that, Jose, he's completely right in the idea that, coaches set this example for and parents set the example for the way that the kids are going to act. There's no question about it.
Right. Doctor, right. You want to add something?
Yeah, well, with Mary Jo's story, she grew up in a home where her parents, they taught balance. She was going to a tournament in Orlando, and they go, well, why don't we go to Disney World? So it wasn't sports all the time. And what's happened is many parents, they put their children in organized sports. They think this is going to be their ticket to their future. They see the millions of dollars that athletes earn every year, and they become very myopic and one focused in this early sports specialization, or putting them into sports thinking this is going to be the end all be all, when it's just one activity along the way. Sports really helps students in school stay, make better grades, because they know they have to keep good grades. And when parents are focused, again, on the outcome, focused on, you know, looking at a ticket or the financial benefits, they're losing their child. And this is also one of our very big concerns.
I wanted to ask you about losing. You know, we were talking a little during the break. Some children have a very low threshold for competition and for losing. So how can they be taught best to deal with it? Because it's certainly a part of athletics.
Well, one thing we talk about in the book, you have to know your child. Every child is different. Every child has different innate physical abilities. Every child has a different temperament. Dwayne Wade has a beautiful story about how he knows he can talk differently to each of his children. And that's really up to the parent. Now, we also talk in the book about, you know, in the beginning, you don't focus on the competition. You focus on the effort. It's about the intrinsic motivation. Every athlete that made it would tell you that they were self-motivated. They were driven. No one had to drive them, you know, I'm talking emotionally and personally, because they wanted to be the best they could. And parents somehow think if they push the child, that's going to be better, but it really isn't. So later on, when the child is mature enough, because they have to handle defeat, they have to handle the loss, then they're more ready for competition, but there's no magic age. And again, we don't profess a magic age either.
Go ahead.
I think one of the things that's really important about that is that, you know, we talked to Herman Edwards, who had the famous quote, you know, you play to win the game, you know, as the former Jets coach. So I asked him, I said, well, when is it appropriate to play to win the game? And he said, even he thinks that in the youth sports level, that there's too much emphasis on that. That there is a point in high school or others where obviously competition is important and you need to learn from losing and you can't be afraid of failure. But there are certain kids, and Andrea hit on it, that are just not, they don't deal with competition quite as well to a certain point. And I think the thing about failure is we really touch on that quite a bit in the book, because so many of the athletes I spoke to really enjoyed talking about their childhood failures because they felt that they'd been so important to their development.
Tell us about some of them.
Well, here, Chipper Jones, I'll go back to him, but it was another good example. But when he was playing, growing up, he was always one of the best players. His father was coaching third base at like a championship game they were at. He had the bases loaded, two strikes. He left the bat on his shoulder, didn't swing, just froze up. And he said that if it had been handled differently, he doesn't know what kind of long-term effect it would have had on him. But his father went to him and didn't say it was okay to strike out, because you don't want to be saying that it's okay to fail.
Right.
But what he said was, look, it happens. It's baseball. Failure is a big part of this sport. And you need to practice and you need to get better and to be in that situation again. And I always tell this story, but it's funny. Chipper played his last season last year, final season of his career. He'll be in the Hall of Fame in 5 years for sure. And they were playing against Andrea's St. Louis Cardinals in a one-game playoff last year. And Chipper had two strikes on him in the last game. And I was like, please just don't leave the bat on your shoulder. But he did manage to hit a dribbler down the first baseline, and he got a favorable call from the umpire, and he beat it out. But the point was that so many of the athletes we spoke to had some failure. Shane Battier went to punt, pass, and kick when he was growing up. As it's one of those events, and he played football, baseball, and he just shanked the punt in a stadium of 70,000 people at halftime. And he was miserable, but his parents were supportive. His parents basically said, look, you just need to get better. And I think that's one of the things. You can't be afraid of failure. And so there is a point where I think exposure to that failure is actually a positive.
Let's take another call or two. This is Alfredo in Weston. Hey there.
Hello. I just want to thank you for your show. I think every youth sports coach should listen to the show.
And buy our book.
Yes, that too. I will get it today. I coach basketball, soccer, football for the kids. And I think coaches miss the point that we're supposed to develop the children, not win. I can't tell you how many times I've had parents come to me almost crying. They tell me, last season we won every game, but my child didn't want to come to practice and he wanted to quit. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I do is I challenge every kid plays every position. And I've had kids who the previous coach says, no, he should not play this, and it was my best forward. Or we had one lineup, and I remember I looked at the coach, and we had the worst defense lineup we've ever had. I looked at the coach and go, it's going to be an interesting quarter. And it was the best quarter we ever played. And the kids who we thought were going to do bad actually went drove all the way to the other side and scored. So, and the confidence they gained, I think that is our job as coaches, is to develop the children, not so much win. I mean, I that's just my opinion.
Well, thank you, Alfredo, because that is a big component of the book. We definitely stress the idea of developing intrinsic motivation, not extrinsic, really helping the child feel good about him or herself.
And again, people will rise to the occasion. Like you mentioned, it's funny. I mean, I'm going to equate this to a much higher level, but I mean, the Heat went into San Antonio without three of their best players the other night, and other guys stepped up. And I think that's a lesson that can be taken to the youth sports level, too. I think if you give kids the opportunity to do more than you would expect them to be able to do, then they might rise to the challenge in a way that you wouldn't anticipate.
I remember going to a 13, 14-year-old football game, and the opposing coaches of their opponent next week were scouting them and taking videos so that they could break down their defense. And that seemed a little bit too much.
Well, I think what happens,
scouting a team for 13-year-olds.
We absolutely, and we have a lot of that in the book. And we talked to Rodney Harrison, former NFL player, about that. I think what's happened is a lot of the coaches, not only the parents viewing the kids as a means to an end, which I think is partly the Tiger Woods effect, which Andrea touched on earlier, of this sort of ticket, this meal ticket, right, out of whatever the situation is. But the coaches start to view the kids as that kind of ticket, too, and they start to compare their records. And Benny Blades covers that. That's one of the reasons he stopped coaching. He said all the parents, all the coaches that he was coaching against were just trying to pad their resumes. And again, I think that they're...
For what, to maybe be a high school coach?
To maybe move up to the next level. And I think... And it's also the personal glory. Look, when you see coaches on television doing something, then you want to mimic what they're doing. And, you know, so you want to be the next Belichick, or you want to be. And Shannon Sharp hits this in the book. He says that he would go to practices and he'd watch people, you know, these coaches screaming at kids like, you know, they were Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, and they're 12-year-olds, you know, and that's just too much of an expectation to put on a kid at that point.
It's unrealistic, and it puts unrealistic pressures as well. And again, getting back developmentally, because this book is really grounded in psychosocial theory and sports psychology, and Eric Erickson, who has a lifespan theory starting in infancy through old age, and what I always envisioned was taking the first four stages, bumping them up into the youth sport years. For instance, like trust versus mistrust. Well, children have to learn to trust themselves. They have to learn to trust their parents are putting them in sports for a good reason. And the virtue in that year is about having faith and hope. Next one is autonomy versus shame. A child has to develop self-reliance. They have to develop willpower to believe in themselves. And every player from Jason Taylor's to Santana Moss, I'm thinking off the top of my head, they all developed that willpower. They just believed in themselves that they could succeed. And the next stage, initiative versus guilt, it's about finding a purpose. And Torrey Hunter's story exemplifies that so beautiful, because sports gave him a purpose. And then the next stage, industry versus inferiority, it's about developing competency. And that's all we want for these kids, is to feel good about themselves. We're not trying to make them pro athletes, but we want them to feel good and enjoy the experience.
Did any of these 100 excellent athletes have any criticism or regrets about their youth sports?
You know, not many of them did. You know, I think that they did talk, though, about how if they had been pushed, more of them said they don't know if they would have gotten to where they got. And that's the major thing that I took out of it. I think, you know, most of them, I think the reason there aren't as many regrets is because most of them made it.
You're right.
Well, they all made it. And that's the reason we spoke to them. But I think the major themes that we took out of them from them were, you know, the importance of sports in their lives, not just because of what they ended up becoming, but because of who it made them as people.
If I could just add one other thing, all the athletes almost uniformly agreed on is they're really against youth sports specialization.
Yeah.
They were really adamant that children learn so much by playing different sports. You use different parts of your body. You learn different skill sets. You learn different abilities. Steve Nash played soccer. You see him running around on the basketball court. LeBron played football. Roy Hibbert talked about he wished he would have played different sports. And they all bemoan the fact that so many parents think that, wow, if I start my child at a very early age, it's going to guarantee that they're going to be successful later on. And there's no guarantee. There is nothing in the statistics that show that there's any guarantee.
So what age do you think the specialization should begin?
It depends on the child. It depends on the sport. It depends on, again, so many variables. So, you know, we're not telling parents, but we're showing them all these different examples. If you're in figure skating or gymnastics or tennis, it might be an earlier age. But if it's football, not necessarily at all an early age.
Yeah, what we got from most of the athletes was the longer that you can wait, the better. The longer, and again, there are some sports, as Andrea is mentioning, where that's just not an option because figure skating, gymnastics, tennis to a certain degree. But there are the athletes. Raul Abanez was a good example of this. Grew up in Miami playing baseball, and he said he basically quit baseball for a year when he was in his early teens because he was just playing year-round, doing the whole travel thing, and he just got sick of it. And Chad Pennington has a quote in there. He basically says, look, the best thing that my parents did was, you know, I played baseball and I played football. And then in the summer, I went out to the lake and I didn't play anything because it just gave him a mental break from having to do. And right now what we see is these travel leagues, these kids are literally playing all year round, okay, the same sport over and over and over. And whether it's emotionally or physically, it's just not, in most cases, the best thing for them.
We're speaking with, that was the voice of Ethan Skolnick. He's the Palm Beach Post sports writer. Also visiting with Dr. Andrea Korn. She's a clinical psychologist, and the name of the book is Raising Your Game.
And tomorrow night at Books and Books in Coral Gables, 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So has it been proven that discipline and excellence in sports translates to academic discipline and excellence?
I think there probably is a corollary because you have to show persistence. You have to show effort. It's very important. If you want to achieve, you have to work hard to succeed. And so all of the athletes talked about that they had that discipline. They were willing to put in the effort. And they also knew they had to make good grades. I mean, that's one of the other untold benefits of playing sports is that you have to achieve a certain grade point average.
I was wondering about that because I was thinking sometimes it might work against it and they are so busy practicing their sport that they don't devote enough time to their studies.
Well, that's a concern as well. And again, that is up to the parent and the student and depends what age we're talking about.
And if you're a real star, you probably get a pass here and there.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Yeah. You know, again, we're talking in generalities. We're not talking in specifics. But in terms of the big picture, we would hope that they would, you know, help. One would balance the other.
And I think having that carrot, I think that's the big thing. That's Ray Allen talked about, that having a carrot that you can put over the kid to say, look, if you want to play sports, if you enjoy this, and again, if the kid enjoys it for his or her own sake, if you enjoy this and you want to keep doing this, you have to have a certain grade point average. And we got that from a lot of the athletes that we spoke to. I'll give one final example on this that relates to LeBron. You know, LeBron was basically in a situation where his mother, you know, he didn't know his father. His mother was dealing with a lot of financial issues and other things like that. And it was LeBron's coach, Frank Walker Sr., who took LeBron in. And not only did LeBron develop athletically, but after he had had very hit or miss attendance for a 2-year period, he had perfect attendance in fourth grade while he was living with the Walkers. So the combination of sports and academics for him really went together.
Let's squeeze in a quick call here. This is Esther in Miami. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is, I have a boy who's in elementary school, and he's pretty athletic, but he loves basketball. But I don't think he's going to be that kind of competitive basketball kid, even in middle school or high school. What other sports are there for athletes who are not, you know, in those major sports? Because I was looking around, for example, for rowing, and it all seems to be in high school, for volleyball, but you have to be in, like, some sort of team where it's very expensive. What other sports are there, and where would you look for them?
Well, Esther, my best advice would be ask your son, what does he like to do? And I would start there, because I don't know your son, but I think if he could tell you what sports he enjoys, what sport he watches on TV, what sport he plays out in the yard or in the park, you'll get an idea. And right now, let him enjoy basketball. You don't know what may come of it. So right now he's playing a team sport. He may love team sports. He may shift to individual sports. Again, it's not about trying to predict the future, but why don't you be in the moment and just try to enjoy the process with him and talk to him more to think about and ask him, what does he want to do?
And I think Esther, too, to follow up on that, you know, we talked to Jay Feely in the book, who's a kicker for the he used to play for the Dolphins. He's now with the Arizona Cardinals. And Jay basically said he had a daughter who really wasn't good at anything athletically, but then he sort of stumbled into swimming with her and she likes it. And so he's continued to go with it. And one of the interesting things, we did talk to a lot of the athletes about what they're doing with their own kids. And you would think that a lot of them, their kids would follow them into the same sport, but they don't. And just because they have the same genes, they may not be suited for that particular sport. But what we found with the athletes is their advice was, and we closed the book with this. This was from Cliff Floyd, who has a young, very young son. And he said, he says, you always want him to be better than his father, but I just want him to be the best that he can be. And I think that's what we closed the book
with. And that's the direction we try to push in a nice way all parents to follow their child, to lead, but to also listen.
And not push him in one direction.
Right.
So much of this is about the emotions, Dr. Korn, and your own experience with therapy and how that changed, because you're still a tennis player,
Yes, I am.
We just have a couple of seconds left, but do you recommend therapy for these young athletes?
Not necessarily. It all depends. I think when there's performance anxiety, when there's significant inhibitions, when there's real serious fears. But generally speaking, no.
Okay.
Well, it's been a very interesting hour. We've been joined by Palm Beach Post sports writer and columnist Ethan Skolnick. He covers the Miami Heat. And also we've been talking to Broward-based clinical psychologist Dr. Andrea Korn. Their book is Raising Your Game, 100 Accomplished Athletes Help Guide Your Boys and Girls Through Sports. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us. Our producer is Richard Ive. Technical direction from Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. Free audio archives and downloads at our website. That's WLRN.org, including this afternoon's. Also, more information at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Drop us a like, if you will. And tomorrow's program is with author and journalist A.L. Press, whose latest work is Beautiful Souls, The Courage and Conscience of Ordinary People in Extraordinary Time. What makes an individual make remarkable sacrifices? And today's calendar, on this day in 1513, a mere 500 years ago, explorer Juan Ponce de Leon comes ashore on the peninsula he named La Florida. Also on this day in 1908, 105 years ago, the birth of the performer Buddy Ebsen in Belleville, Illinois. He was raised in Palm Beach County. He took pre-med at the University of Florida, and he and his sister had a popular dance act in the 1930s. Ye doggy. One more before we head to Little Italy's Ravenite Social Club. On this day in 1992, 21 years ago, mobster John Gotti is found guilty of the murder of his boss, Big Paulie Castellano, who was gunned down in front of Sparks Steakhouse in Midtown Manhattan. Our theme music created by the talented Michael Levine. And so we leave you with a thought from John Gotti, the late Teflon Don, quote, "If you think your boss is stupid, remember, you wouldn't have a job if you were any smarter." This is Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from where else but NPR News.